Okay, Gatvach Shavua Tov. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Ches, 148. We're going to pick up on Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Beis, a little ways up.
13 lines above.
How many?
13. Kayinu Gatanan.
All right, we're going to pick up just... we're going to pick up 16 lines up just because it's one process. Amar Reb Chelbo... So Rav Chelbo says, "Chamer de progaisa umaya de diyum says kipchu aseres hashvatim Yisrael." That the wine of progaisa and the water from the Dumeses River, and we're going to see in a minute that there are places where those overlap. So in the area of progaisa, the Dumeses ran through. So that's where the aseres hashvatim were taken from Yisrael, and Rashi explains. That because Rashi says Shehim Bali Hana, that they were people who took, you know, enjoyed the finer things in life, Asukim Bakach, they were engaged in this wine and these waters, Bloiha Oskim Batorah, and therefore because they were busy pursuing these pleasures, they were not engaged with Torah. The Yatzulu Tabris Ra, they went onto a bad path, and that led, you know, presumably it estranged them from the Torah, and that led them to their ultimate dispersion and galus. So says the Gemara story, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, Ikla Lahasam. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach went to there, so this Rashi explains, this was a place, the Prugisa, the Umeses, the place where this region where they had this wine, and the river ran through there, and Imshach Basrayu, he was drawn after them, Rashi says, after the Yain and the Rechitza, after the wine and these waters of this river, or this body of water, Iyakar Tamude. And basically, somehow it caused him, Rashi says, So he forgot the Torah that he had learned. Kihadar Asa, when he came back and he met with his former colleagues, the people he used to learn with, Kamrul Mikre Besifra, he got up to read, I'm not sure if it means the Sefer Torah or Safra, the Brises of it, but Bay Lim Mikra, I guess it was the Torah, because he wanted to read the Pasuk, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, that, you know, which we know is the Pasuk in Shemos, and it says, so it came out, what he said was, Amar HaCheresh Haya Libam. That their heart was deaf, but in any event, they realized that something happened to him. So Bo Rabbanan Rachmele, the Rabbanan davened on his behalf, Vahadr Tamude, and his learning was restored. Behindu Disnan, this is that which we learn. Reb Nahorai Omer, Reb Nahorai, pay attention to who that we're saying in the name of Reb Nahorai, said, "Have a goyel amakum Torah." So he says, "It's you should even be." Let yourself go into galus, but into a place that has Torah. Val tomer shehi tavo achrecha. Don't assume that the Torah or its learners, the people learning, will come after you. Shechavrecha yikaimua biyadcha, because your friends are what help you to fully establish your learning. I'll say in a minute what Rashi explains about how that works. And don't, this is an avos, this whole thing is on your own wisdom, don't rely. So how do friends help you, hold on to your learning? Rashi explains, that you'll be with them, together with them, that you'll have learned the mesechta, that others are going to be learning, you're going to hear them learning that same Masechta, and it's going to make it more fluent in your mouth, and you won't forget it. So I don't know if it's the idea that you'll engage in conversations with others of the Talmidei Chachamim, or just that literally almost Rashi makes it sound like osmosis, like you hear it and reminds you from when they're learning, and then in that way, having your colleagues there helps you not forget the Torah. Tani, so I referenced before that we said this in Avos in the name of Reb Nahorai, but it says Tana Loi Reb Nahorai Shemo. His name wasn't really Reb Nahorai, Ela Reb Nechemya Shemo, but rather his real name was Reb Nechemya. Ra'amri lo Rabbi Lazar ben Arach Shmo, and some say that it was actually Rabbi Lazar ben Arach who was the one we just learned this story with. V'lamar nikra Shmo Reb Nuray, why was he called Reb Nuray? Sheman here ene chachamim bahalacha, because he would light up, he would give brilliance to the eyes of the chachamim in halacha. So we see that if this was Rabbi Lazar ben Arach, he's the one that was Reb Nuray, who even said this thing, and he was the one to whom the story happened that by being away from the Chachamim, he lost his accomplishments in learning, and then he ultimately, they were restored when the Chachamim sought Rachamim for him. Okay, Avaloi Mizgarin, so we had a Mishnah that said a bunch of things. So one of the things it said is that a Mizgar was, they would use a kind of implement to scrape off, I think, the dead skin or imperfections in the skin, whatever it was. It seemed something that they used more at the Beis HaMerchatz, but they would also use it elsewhere. Tana Rabbanan, ein gairin b'megreres b'shabbos, that you can't scrape off skin with this skin scraper. Again, I don't know what its technical title is. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, im haya raglov muluch lachos betitu betzaya, gairin kedarkov ein achoshesh. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, when is it that you can't do it? You can't do it with, I figured Michael would text us the right word. A striggle? Okay. So in any event, when is it that you can't use it? You can't use it to scrape off excess skin or something of that nature. But if someone, his feet were dirty with tits, like mud or tsoa with excrement, so then, when he's using the megreris now, it's not to scrape off the skin, but to clean himself, then gara kedarko, he could do that in the regular way, ve'en achoshesh, he doesn't have to worry that he's doing something wrong on Shabbos. So it's only for the purpose of scraping off skin that you can't use it, but if you need it to clean your feet, then that's okay. Reb Shmuel bar Yehuda avdile emo megrarta de kaspa. That Reb Shmuel, the son of Reb Yehuda, his mother made him a silver megreris. And Rashi says, l'Shabbos, so you see that. So now I'm not sure. Sometimes there are things on Shabbos that you designate them specifically for Shabbos that you would otherwise be used for a malacha, but on Shabbos is permissible. So he used to use this to, I guess, clean himself, but not to not in order to just take skin off. Okay, continues the Gemara. Ein yardin kardima, that you don't go down to the kardima, which was a river. So my taima asked the Gemara, why should the Mishnah said you shouldn't go there? Why not? We say mishum pika. Rashi explains pika is that tit shall also nahar machlik, that the mud of that particular river was very slippery. Ubig de adam nishurim b'mayin kishu nofel, that if the person is going to fall, his clothing are going to get soaked. Basili de schita, and the concern is that he'll come when his clothing gets soaked from slipping into the water, he'll come to squeeze them out, and through that do an isser of Shabbos. So that's why you don't go down to that river on Shabbos. Continues the Gemara, the Mishnah says, "Vein osin apiktivizin v'Shabbos," that you don't use like ipecac syrup, something that causes you to vomit. Amar Rabba bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabba bar Chana says, "Rabbi Yochanan lashanu el basam." Which kind of thing that causes you to vomit can you not use? The one that's using some kind of roots or potion, a liquid. So the idea is because Rashi explains, because exeris chika samanim, we know that medical treatments are not permitted on Shabbos if it's not a serious illness. So he's saying this that you're not allowed to do it is when you're talking about using like roots or something like this, that you're making a medicine that you use to induce one to vomit. Avol biyad mutter. But if someone wants to stick their finger, in their throat, down their throat and cause themselves to vomit, that's mutter. Tanya Reb Nechemia, Amar Reb Nechemia said in the Braisa tells us, af b'chol aser b'nei hafsid ochlin. So now I don't think Reb Nechemia is coming to argue. He's just saying during the weekday, you cannot stick your finger down your throat to cause yourself to vomit because you're causing the food to be wasted. What food are we talking about? So Rashi points out that this was a practice. They're the food that's already in your stomach. So how would this work? People would eat in a gluttonous fashion, so they would eat a lot, and then they wanted to eat more, but they were full. So they would cause themselves to vomit up what they had already eaten so that they could eat more. So aside from the fact that that's probably not a good behavior, Rashi's explaining that that's about tashchis on the food. Rashi says, when they hefsed ochlen shebemeyav, it's a waste of the food that's already in his stomach. And we told kahu rav, that by causing himself to vomit, he'll become hungry again, v'chozer ochel, he'll eat even more. So again, I don't think Rav Nechemiah, it's just a different halacha. He's not coming to say, he's not coming to debate what's said here, which is if that for medical purposes or therapeutic purposes, a person wants to cause themselves to vomit, they can do that. They just can't do it with a syrup. They have to do it with a, with their finger. It continues the Gemara, three lines from the bottom of Kufman Zayin on the base. This is talking about the fact that we wouldn't straighten out the bones of a of an infant. So he says Allah that to lufufe is like to swaddle. But this is not swaddling to keep the baby warm. This was like we had this earlier in Shabbos. In the Samachs maybe, where it talked about, so this was where they would wrap up the baby tightly in order to kind of straighten out, the bones of the baby from the, rigors of childbirth. So he's saying that, that you can do. You can kind of swaddle the baby. So the Gemara asks, "V'ha nan tanan?" But we learned in our Mishnah, in Matzvin, that you can't straighten out the bones of a baby. So the Gemara says, Hasam b'chumrei shedra demechsi kebone. He says, when is it that the Mishnah said you cannot straighten out? I was not talking about a baby. And by the way, Rashi points out that in if it's the Yom Leda itself, so we learned a little while ago on Kuf Chav Tes that anything that was said in the Teichacha in Yecheskel, that was an illness you could do for a woman who just had a baby on Shabbos. So Rashi says we're not talking about the first day, but he's saying after that, in other words, when our Mishnah says you can't do it, what's it talking about? It's saying when our Mishnah says you can't straighten out the bones, it's saying after the first day of after labor that you cannot try to if you had one of the discs. Rashi says chulios shel sedrosh and esparko achas mehen, that one of the parts of the spine slipped out of its place. So that, if it's the first day the baby's born, you could do it, but if not, you can't. So when our Mishnah says you can't, it's referring to relocating a dislocated, segment of the spine. And what can you do but to swaddle a baby in blankets, and I think they even used to put a belt around the baby, but that you can do, because that presumably doesn't look like, or you're not really fixing it. Fixing a bone in a vertebrae from the spine, the Gemara says that would be similar to, I don't think it's Midaraisa, but Midrabanan, that would be similar to building, because you're fixing, the spine and putting it into proper working order. Okay, says the Mishnah continues, Ein machzirnes hashever, you don't, return a broken, something that's, a bone that's broken. Amar Rav Chana Bagdata, Amar Shmuel, Rav Chana Bagdata from Baghdad said the name of Shmuel, halacha machzirin as hashever. The halacha is, that you do return a broken bone to its place. So the way Rashi learns that Sfir Le Shmuel, Shmuel's of the opinion that Machzir and Tnan, that when we had in our mission of the language, it said you don't return a broken bone to its place. Shmuel had the gear, so you do return a broken bone to its place. Now, the Ritva, like Rashi, brings that pshat, that it's just how you should learn the Mishnah. And from the beginning, the Mishnah is saying it's okay to put a broken bone back into place. The Ritva says that it's possible that Shmuel is arguing on, I believe it's the Ritva, says that Shmuel is arguing on the Mishnah, so to speak. Now, what right does Shmuel have to argue on the Mishnah? And this is going to become relevant to understanding the Gemara in a minute. Shmuel does not have a right to argue on a Mishnah, but we do have a concept of Nishtana Teva, that sometimes the nature of human beings and their health conditions shifts. And if that happens, then the halacha shifts along with it. So Shmuel, as we know, was a doctor. And so the idea was, Shmuel was concerned or suspected that the nature of people's bodies had changed, and that having a dislocated bone and not attending to it right away was a issue of sakana. So either Shmuel learned in the Mishnah that you're allowed to do it in the first place, or Shmuel felt that medical science or medical reality had shifted enough that it's something you should do on Shabbos. I'll explain why that pshat is very relevant in a minute. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana Ichloi Lepumpadisa. Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, who was from Eretz Yisrael, went to Pumpadisa, which is in Bavel. Lo'ol Lepirkei de Rabbi Yehuda. So he was in the town, Pumpadisa was the town Rabbi Yehuda used to give the shir, and Rabbi Bar Bar Chana didn't go to the shir. Sadre La'ada Daila, he sent Ada Daila, is like his, Rashi says he's Mamuna, he's the appointed one, he was his assistant. So he sent Ada, his assistant, to Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. And Amar Lei, he said, Rabbi Yehuda said when he sent Ada there, he said, Zil Garbe, go take his Rashi says, Kach Bigdo Achi Yavo, take his clothing until he comes. Basically, hold him hostage. Take a piece of his clothing and tell him until he comes to the shir, he's not getting it back. Okay? So Azul, so he wanted to get his clothing back, so he came to the shir. Ado went, Garbe he took Rabbi Bar Bar Chana's clothing, so therefore, Asa, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana came to the shir, Ashkechei dekadarish, he found that they were darshening there, that Rabbi Yehuda was darshening in the shir, in machzir and sashever, that you can't put a broken bone back into place. Amar Lei, so Rabbi Bar Bar Chana heard this from Rabbi Yehuda, he said to him, Hachi Amar, Rav Chanan Bagdata Mer Shmuel Halacha Machzir Nes Hashever. He says, but Rav Chanan Bagdata says in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is that we do return, the bone to its place. Amar Loi. So Rav Yehuda said to Rav Arachana, Ha Chana Didan, Ha Shmuel Didan, Vle Shmiel Li. He says, ironically, you, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, came from Eretz Yisrael. You're quoting to me Rav Chanan Bagdata, who was a Babylonian, and Shmuel, who was a Babylonian. So in other words, you're coming to me in Bavel, teaching me things that I never heard from the people in Bavel. V'lav b'dina gibartich. So he says, doesn't this prove that I was justified in taking your clothes away till you come to the shir? Rashi says, because b'tmiya, so he says, isn't it clear that this was a perfectly legitimate thing for me to do? Because she'ilu lo basa lo lamdenu. Because if you wouldn't have come, even though we're here in Bavel, and what you quoted to us came from Bavel, I never heard it. So if you wouldn't have come to the shir, we would have taught the halacha that you can't fix a broken bone, and in fact, you can fix a broken bone. Okay. Continues, the Mishnah says, Mishin Nifrika Yado, the Mishnah said that if someone's hand gets, Rashi says, Shiyata Etza Miperik Shilo, that a bone went out of its joint, he says, Mishin Nifrika Yado Varagla, Yitrafame Bitsonin, he shouldn't Yitrafame, Rashi says, is like a Lashon of Beitzin Trufois Bekara, that eggs that are like scrambled or mixed up. So he's saying like basically that you shouldn't agitate the use cold water to agitate the bone either back into place or to relieve the thing. So you wouldn't with cold water to kind of manipulate the or rub or massage or manipulate the bone. Okay, so Rav Avya have a Yosef come to Rav Yosef. Rav Avya was sitting in front of Rav Yosef. Shanyale Yade. That Rashi says, Nishtanish Yadam in Koma, that is, his hand moved to a different place from out of its place. So basically, something happened with one of his bones. Amrle Hachi Mai. So he said, what if I do this? And he showed him how he was moving his hand. So Rav Yosef says, Asr, Vahachi Mai, and what about this? Amrle Asr. Said to him, it's Asr, Adahachi Itpach Yade. Through this process of showing this to Rav Yosef, even though everything he did, he said it was Asr, his hand ended up getting fixed. Now, I don't think this was a ruse by him. This was, he was trying to figure out, you know, he was showing him. He didn't know that those things work, but Rav Yosef told him, no, that looks like refuah. That looks like refuah. You can't do it. But it so happened that somewhere in that process of trying it out, his hand actually got cured. Amarle, mighty ba'ilach. So, Rav Yosef said to him, why are you asking me this question? You should know this. Hatanan, we learned in the Mishnah, in our Mishnah, Mishan Nifrika Yado Araglo, Lo Yitrafein Bitsoinein. Ela Roichitz Kedarkov in Nisrape Nisrape. Our Mishnah said that if someone's hand or foot gets displaced, you can't manipulate it in cold water, but you can wash in the regular way, and if it gets healed, it gets healed. So you see that even simple things like manipulating it in the cold water, you can't do. So why would you have thought you could do any of these other things that you were going to do? So Amar Lei, he said to him, Velo Tanan, didn't we learn in the Mishnah, Ein Machzirin Es HaShever, that you don't fix a broken bone? V'amar Rav Chanan Bagdata Amar Shmuel, Halacha Machzirin Es HaShever, and then Rav Chanan Bagdata said in the name of Shmuel, that we had it wrong, and the right way to read the Mishnah was that that you return, that you do fix a broken bone. So therefore, he was basically saying, if our Mishnah was wrong when it said, Ein Machzirin Es HaShever, that you don't replace a broken bone, then maybe it was wrong when it said you don't manipulate the bone with the cold water. So Amar Lei, he said to him, Kulo b'chada mechisa mechasinu. So Rashi says that means that bariga achas harakto is everything. The Mishnah is all woven in one weaving. Basically, he was saying you can't, it's not just because one thing is wrong doesn't mean everything is wrong. Hecha de itmar itmar, hecha de lo itmar lo itmar. Where it was said that something was mistaken about the Mishnah, it was said, and where it wasn't said, it wasn't said. So just because it turned out that the girsa we had in our Mishnah said not to replace a broken bone was wrong, because really you could replace, you could fix a broken bone, doesn't mean the thing that was next to it was wrong. So he said that wasn't a good reason to think of it. Now, the Mefarshim spent a lot of time talking about, like, why did he think that just because there was a mistake in one thing that was said that there was a mistake in another? And that's why the pshat at the Ritva says it makes it somewhat easier, because the Mefarshim point out that it's the Aruch HaShulchan said this. He was quoting the Ritva, who had another reason that Shmuel was arguing, but the Aruch HaShulchan had this idea that that maybe it was that Shmuel felt that Nishtana Ateva. So the Aruch HaShulchan explains that that also explains why Rav Avia thought that just because one thing is wrong, the other is wrong, is not because he's saying our transmission is unreliable, but basically he's saying, according to the way the Aruch HaShulchan explains, if you understood that Shmuel didn't have the different girsa, that Shmuel felt that maybe the nature of people had changed and this has become a sakana in ways that it wasn't originally, so maybe not just a dislocated bone is a problem, but also this, whatever the difference is between the two cases, but when Misha Nifrika Yodo, he felt that maybe then also Shmuel would have felt that that is Nishtana Teva and it's become a sakana and therefore you should be able to do it. To which Rav Yosef responded and said, no, where Shmuel said it, he said it. Where he didn't say it, he didn't say it. But if you go with that pshat of the Aruch HaShulchan, it becomes easier to understand how it was that Rav Avia thought just because one thing is wrong, the other is wrong, because he thought maybe the Teva had changed in that regard also. Hadron Halach Chavis. Okay, begins a new parak. We're going to deal a little bit here with the halachas of ways in which you can conduct permissible transactions on Shabbos. Says the Mishnah, Shoyl Adam Echaver Kadeyayim Kadeshemen, that a person can borrow from someone else barrels or pitchers of wine or oil, ubovacha yolomelo halveni, as long as he doesn't say lend it to me. Now we'll see that language of lend it to me is very particular, but basically he has to go to his friend and say, could you give me a pitcher of wine, and it's understood that he's going to return it after Shabbos or Yontif. But as long as he cannot use the language of lend it to me, halveni. And again, we'll get into that language. V'chein ha'isha mechaverta ki karas, so too a woman can go to her friend and get a extra loaf of bread, but she can't say, lend it to me. V'im eino ma'mino. Now what happens if you go to the person and you want to borrow from them, and you're not going to use the language of borrowing, but the person isn't sure they're going to get paid back. So if you don't trust the person that you're going to get paid back, maniach taliso etzlo v'osa imo cheshbon l'achar Shabbos. You can leave something there as a deposit. You leave your garment there, and so when you go to your friend and say, do me a favor, give me a loaf of bread, and I'll give it back to you, if the guy doesn't trust, he's going to give it back to him, so he leaves his garment there, and then that way he'll pick it up after Shabbos, and they'll make a cheshbon at that point, but they cannot discuss price or treat it as a halvah. V'chein, Erev Pesach b'Yerushalayim shechalios b'Shabbos. Now what happens, Rashi explains the case, someone forgot, so Erev Pesach was on Shabbos, so Pesach started Matzi Shabbos, so they have to bring the carbon Pesach on Shabbos. So we know that because it has to be brought on Yud Dalet Nisan, it gets brought even if it is Shabbos. But Shabbos came and the guy hadn't gotten his carbon Pesach. So if that happened to someone, he forgot. So maniach taliso etzlo, he can leave his talis with the person who sells the lambs for carbon Pesach. The notals pischo, he takes his carbon pesach, va'osa imo cheshbon lachar yomtiv, and he goes after yomtiv to true up with him. Rashi says lachar yomtiv liyom shlishi, to the third day, meaning on Monday, because he buys it from him on Shabbos is day one. Day two is yomtiv, you can't make a cheshbon, and day three is the first day of Chol HaMoed, you can do it then. That's how Rashi learns. It's actually, there's a machlokus in the Poskim, I think in the Tur and the Beis Yosef, about whether you can figure it out on Chol HaMoed or not. Are you allowed to go and figure out the on Chol HaMoed? So others will understand that Osei Mocheshman Lachar Yantav will be after Yantav altogether. This is a question of doing things on Chol HaMoed, but we'll see that the part of the whole thing, I'm going to give away a little bit in the next Gemara, but the basic idea is that also if you do something longer term, then people are more likely to write it down. But if it's a short-term borrowing, they're less likely to write it down. So there's competing considerations here, which presumably factors into the poskim of, on the one hand, you want it to be a short-term borrowing, which would support the idea that you figure it out on the first day of Chol HaMoed. On the other hand, Chol HaMoed has some of the halachas of Yomtiv, and you don't generally do business on Chol HaMoed. So, but it seems that this, Rashi is of the opinion that you do it on Chol HaMoed, and like I said, I believe it's a machlokas between the Torah and the Beis Yosef. Okay, says the Gemara, Amalei Rabba Bar Rav Chanan Le'Abaya. We're gonna have a series of Gemaras of Rabba Bar Rav Chanan saying to Abaya, Maishna Hishilaini, Umaishna Halveini. So he says, the implication of the Mishnah is that you can borrow from your friend, but you cannot use the language of Halveini. So especially in Mishnaic Hebrew, there's two words. There's halva and she'ela. So she'ela is borrowing. Like if I say, can I borrow your hammer? So then I give you back your hammer. If I say, can I borrow an egg, which I'm not going to give you back the same egg, I'm going to give you a different egg, that's considered a halva. So basically what we're saying is that it seems, the Mishnah says, as long as you don't use the language of a halva, which is that I'm going to pay it back to you, not the same one, I'm going to pay back a different one to you. So he says, Amrlei, Rabbi said back to him, Hishileini lo asa lemichtov, haveini asa lemichtov. So he says, no, I'll tell you the difference. Because halva is generally something that you're not giving back the same item, you're paying it back. So it often takes the form of a longer borrowing. In fact, if you don't specify a different date, it's assumed to be a 30-day borrowing. And the poskim deal with this question about whether you can actually demand your money back sooner than 30 days. But in any event, if you say halva, so the language of halva, even if you mean that you're going to pay it back quickly, the language of halva is generally associated with a longer-term borrowing. And therefore, we're concerned that he's going to come to write it down because of a longer-term borrowing. He doesn't want to forget about it. If you say hishileini, lend it to me, that is typically used in the context of, like, borrow my hammer and I'll give it back, or borrow my whatever. So that's generally a short-term loan. So that you can say on Shabbos or Yom Tov, but you can't say halveini on Shabbos and Yom Tov. You could say hishileini. Now, mind you, hishileini would be the wrong language to use, because here we're talking about taking a pitcher of wine or oil or a loaf of bread, which is something you're going to eat or drink, and then you're going to give back a different one, and you're going to give back money. So the Mishnah is basically saying you cannot use the regular language you would use for this kind of borrowing, but the implication is you can say, hashileini, you should lend it to me. That's using a strange form of borrowing for this form of borrowing, so therefore that's something you could do on Yom Tov. Ask the Gemara, wait a second, Valkivan the Bachol Zimni de Boy Lemerle Haveni Vamale Hashileni Vla Kapidi Lave Vasi Lemichto Bishabis Nami Asi Lemichto. He says, wait a second. The reality is, even during the weekday, sometimes the right thing to say would be Halveni. Like if you say, lend me, a dozen eggs and you're going to give it back later, that's a longer term Halveni. But yet you say, I shouldn't use the case of eggs. He says, lend me $1,000. So that normally is longer term. But yet if the person says Hashileni and uses a Lashon of She'ela, that Lo Kapit Alei, people don't necessarily, aren't particular, and they treat that like as if he said halveni, and therefore he has 30 days to pay it back. So, and the concern is as follows. So basically saying, even on the weekday, people aren't always careful. Halveni, Hishileni, they mix up the two all the time. So therefore, why don't I have to be concerned that since during the weekday, even though the right language to be used is Halveni, people often say Hishileni, and they'll treat it as if he said Halveni, and they'll write it down in their book. So he says, B'Shabbos Nami Yasu L'Mechtov. So wait a second. So if on Shabbos you say Hishileni instead of Halveni, you're not really helping yourself because people use those terms interchangeably, and he's still going to come to write it, because even during the week, sometimes we'll say Hishileni, the person doesn't correct him and says, please clarify that you mean Halveni. He just writes it down and they treat it as a longer term loan. So therefore, the question is, you're not really helping things, because Hishileni, it's true, technically it means something different, but in practice, it means the same thing. Amarle, he said, Bechol de lo shani, so he said, I'm sorry, so it says that we're going to skip the parentheses. Amar lei b'Shabbos kiven de hishileni hu deshari le rabbanan halveni lo shari le minkra milsav lo yasi lemechtav. He said it is true that generally speaking, sometimes people say hishileni, they mean halveni, and they still write it down. But since the chachamim were makbid and said on Shabbos you should only say hishileni, even when you're doing the form of borrowing that hishileni doesn't fit, you're saying, give me a pitcher of wine. You're not going to give him back that pitcher of wine. You're going to give him a different one. So since Chazal were makbid, it's going to stand out to the person. And they said, you cannot say Halveni if you want. So then he's going to remember that it's Shabbos, and that the reason Chazal said he should use the wrong term is so that it should be differentiated and that he won't come to write it in his book. So basically what the Gemara is answering is saying, you're right that the Mishnah is basically saying, hey, Hishileni, to make a distinction. It is true that sometimes, even during the weekday, people use those terms interchangeably. But since at the end of the day, Hishileni is the wrong term, it's going to stand out to the person. And when on Shabbos someone says to him, Hishileni, lend me a pitcher of wine, the guy's going to understand the reason he's saying Hishileni is because it's Shabbos and Chazal only let him say that word. They don't let him say Halveni, and therefore he's going to be more careful and not write it down. Okay, Amarle, next thing, Amarle, Rava Bar Rav Chanan said to Abaya, Michti, let's see. Amar Rabbanan, the Rabbanan said, Komili de Yantif, Kemad de Esher L'Shanuyim Mishninam. So he says, we have a principle which we learned in Maseches Beitza, which Rashi points out, this is the beginning, if I'm not mistaken, of the fourth or fifth parak, I think the fourth parak in Beya, which he says, Hamevi kade yayin, if someone's bringing pitchers of wine, lo yaviim besal bekupa, he shouldn't bring them in a basket or in a box, but rather he carries them in his hand or on his shoulder. So the idea is that if you're doing something on Yom Tov, generally la'ochom tzorach ochol nefesh or some other permitted Yom Tov purpose, that even though you're allowed to do it, you should try to do it with a shinoi, right? So the question he was asking him, he says, let's see, the Mishnah tells us that when you're doing something on Shabbos or Yom Tov, you should do it with a shinoi. Hani nashi demalyin chatzpayu maya. But when women go and fill up their pitchers or their barrels with water, my time aloy mishanin, why don't they do a shinoi? So if the halacha for the Mishnah and Beya is you should always do a shinoi, so why don't they do a shinoi? So he said, the reason they don't do a shinoi is because we couldn't come up with a suitable shinoi that they could do that would make a difference. Why? Hechli Abdi, what should he do? If you're going to say, Demaya b'chatzva rabo limli b'chatzva zuto, if you're going to tell me that a woman who would ordinarily be filling up a big barrel of wine or a big pitcher of wine is now should fill it up with a small one, wait a second. She needed the bigger amount of water. So you're going to make her take multiple trips. So you're doing a shinoi that actually is going to make Yom Tov worse because now she has to make multiple trips to the river. Now, if you're going to tell you the Malyam Bechatzuzuta Limla Bechatzu Rabba, maybe you'll tell me, okay, fine. I don't want to cause her to walk back and forth more times. But let's say she was going to go with a small pitcher. Maybe we should make her take a big pitcher and she won't fill it fully, because that way it'll be a shinoi on Yom Tov. He says that we're not going to do because kamafshi b'masoi. You're making her carry this heavier barrel or this heavier pitcher on a base, and therefore we don't want to cause her to do that on Yom Tov. So we're not going to tell her a woman who normally fills with a small barrel to fill with a large barrel. So continues the Gemara on top of Amud Beis, Nifras Sudra. Maybe I'll tell you which is a solution that's suggested in Maseches Beah for a different reason. Maybe I should spread a handkerchief on top of the barrel or pitcher that she's drawing, so that it shows that this is only being done. This is a shina that's being done for in a permissible way on Yom Tif. So the Gemara says, I don't want to put a handkerchief on top of her barrel of water, because asali de schita. Because what's going to happen? The water is going to slosh around. The handkerchief is going to get wet. And as we referenced before, we were dealing with it with towels. We were dealing with other things. We don't want people to have a wet piece of clothing, of cloth, because then they'll come to squeeze it and be over on the issur of schita. Okay, so maybe nachsiye benachtema. So maybe we should say that women who are going out to fill a barrel of water on Yom Tif have to go with barrels that have a cover, and then you should put the cover in its place. It won't be a handkerchief, it will be a proper cover, and then that will be the shina that we use for Yom Tif, that you put the cover in its place on Yom Tif. So Gemara says, no, that's also a problem. Zimnin de mifsik vasin makatre. So maybe the barrel top, they would generally tie on to they would tie it onto the barrel with a rope. Maybe the rope is going to become separated, and she'll come to tie on a new knot. And Rashi says it'll be a keshe shel kayama, because it's designed to permanently hold the barrel, the cover affixed to the barrel, and then she'll be over on the Eser Shabbos. Hilkach lo efsher. So therefore, Rabbi Baruch Hanan was asking Abaya, why don't we do a shinoi by women who are drawing water, that they should do something different? And basically Abaya answered him, in theory we would do something different, but we couldn't come up with a shinoi that wouldn't create problems of its own, so we let them do it in the regular fashion on Yom Tov. Third line down on Kuf Mam Kas on Beis. Rabbi Baruch Hanan said to Abaya, Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, that this is a Mishnah in Beah. It says lo mesafkin v'lo metapchin v'lo merakdin b'yantif. So we'll go with Rashi here. There's different pshatim on what these things mean, but mesafkin, Rashi says, is kaf al kaf mishum evil. That it was a form of clapping, like kind of banging the palms together. That was done in sadness. V'lo metapchin, Rashi says here is like beating the chest. And again, this was something that was done for Evel. Now, clapping is something that could be done for Simcha also. But continues, Gemar v'lo meraktin, you don't dance. This, Rashi explains, is talking about Simcha. And the reason is, all of those things you don't do is because maybe you're going to become to be Mesakin Kli Shir. B'yantif. So he says, we don't do any of these things. We don't bang on the chest. We don't clap. We don't dance on Yom Tov. V'kochazinan da'avdan. So Rava Baruch Hanan asked, wait a second, the Mishnah tells us you don't clap, you don't dance, and yet we see that people do it all the time, and the Rabbanim don't say a word. So Abaya said back to him, Tameh, what, you think that always the Rabbanim speak up when people do things wrong? Hadam Rava, this that Rava said, we actually had this exactly 1 week ago, I know, because it was when I was saying the daf last week. The Gemara said, Lo leisiv inish apumi delechya, so he says, the halacha was that if you have a mavoi that opens or shesarabim and it has a lechi, a person shouldn't sit by that lechi inside the mavoi. Why? Because maybe something's going to roll out from the mavoi into shesarabim like one or two amas, or three, just not four. And then because the mavoi and the shesarabim look pretty similar, even though there's a lechi there, the person's going to come to bring it back into the mavi, because they're not going to realize that they're carrying from Rosh Hashanah Daraisa into a mavi, which is Minatoros or Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So therefore, that's what we said we said that a person shouldn't do that. That he says, let me just see what the Gersa there is. Yeah, the Bach says that Kachazina Nashi, we see that the women take their barrels, they turn them over, and they sit there at the entranceway to the mavi. So we learned that you shouldn't sit by the entranceway to the mavi, and yet we see that they do. And no one says anything to these women who do that. Ella, why don't we say anything to women who sit by the mavi? It's the same reason why we don't say something to people about not clapping, because El Hanach Yisrael, leave the Jews alone. Mutav shiyu shogi gemal yumei zidin. That it better, because they're not going to listen anyway. So if they're not going to listen, Don't, you're making it worse by telling them that they're doing something wrong. Because if you tell them that they do something wrong and then they continue to do it, so then they were warned and they knew it was wrong. Better that they should think it's okay and not realize that they're doing something wrong and leave them alone. And now obviously this presumes that you know that they're not going to listen to you. If you think they're going to listen to you, then you have to say something. But continues the Gemara, Savar Mine, so we're talking about things here, like don't sit at the edge of a mavoi, or don't clap, because you might come to be Misakan Klei Shir. Those are very much the Rabbanan Dika Takonos. So they thought, Hanimili is from these, Hanimili b'drabbanan. So they thought, okay, fine, when do you say, leave the Jews alone, if they're not going to listen anyway, and don't make them be Mezidin? Maybe that's only by drabbanan, b'daraisa lo, but by daraisa not. Says the Gemara of Elohi, it's not true. Loshna b'drabbanan, loshna b'daraisa, that it doesn't make a difference whether it's drabbanan or daraisa. If people are going to, not listen, better, whether it's a Darabana or Daraisa, just don't say anything to them. Well, how do you know that it works Daraisa? The Ha Tosefes Yom Kippurim Daraisa Hi, because the Halacha is Tosefes Yom Kippur. This is the idea that you have to start, it says, Ve'enisim Esnaf Shashechem Tishva Chodesh, that it says, it seems to say that you do some kind of afflicting yourself, or the afflictions of Yom Kippur, that they apply on the 9th of Tishrei. But yet, we know that Yom Kippur is the 10th of Tishrei. So because of that, we understand that you should do a little bit of this fasting on the 9th, fasting and other Inuyim, and therefore, the Chameshes Inuyim, the five, restrictions of Yom Kippur, start to apply a little bit before, while it's still the 9th of Tishrei, a little bit before Shkia, before Yom Kippur. So it says, even though that halacha is midaraisa, we find that people are sitting there guzzling till the last second and trying to drink and sit on the mezuzah and whatever else they do to ways to drink, and they're doing it till the last second, which is over on the Isur Daraisa, because min haTorah you need tosefes, but we don't say anything to them. We see that people eat and drink until the last minute when it gets dark. Immediately we don't say anything to them. So therefore, this halacha that you better that they should be shogegin and they shouldn't be mezidin is true. Whether it's a darbanan, whether it's a daraisa, it doesn't matter. Okay, so a couple of things here. So one is, generally speaking, it's understood that if there's a mafurish thing that's written in the Torah, then you don't make this cheshbon. It's only something like eating on the 9th day of Tishrei, which is less clear that that's something, because presumably, it's one thing to say that they're not going to fix anyway, and therefore better to leave them alone. But if it's something that's mefurish in the Torah, you wouldn't want that to happen. That would be presumably something like a chil Hashem, and you wouldn't want that. The whole question of clapping on Shabbos. So there's a little bit of a distinction between the Litvish worlds and the Hasidic worlds. In the Litvish worlds, there are a lot of people are makbid not to clap on Shabbos, but they'll clap sometimes with the shinoi. So if like you put your palm to the back of your hand, or the back of your hand to the back of your hand, or clap with the edges of your fingers, there's lots of ways to do that. That's mutter, but there are a lot of people are makbid not to clap on Shabbos and Yontif. By the Hasidim, they do clap. And it's brought, I think the Ramah brings a Yeshomrim there, those who say that since nowadays, when we're not skilled in the art of making or fixing a klezemer, a musical instrument, so some of the halachas that were put in place with that cheshbon are less operative nowadays, and that we don't worry about it, and that's the reason why some say they rely on that Yeshomrim of the Ramah to clap on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Okay, continues the Gemara. V'chein isha mechaverta kikaros. A woman can borrow from her, can borrow loaves of bread from her friends. So the Gemara says, this is saying that a woman can borrow it as long as she doesn't say haveni, she could say hashileni. So all this implies that we're dealing with a Shabbos issue. So b'Shabbos hu da'aser, av b'chol shaper dummy. The implication is, this is a Shabbos concern, but during the weekday, no problem. You could borrow a loaf of bread and pay your friend back a loaf of bread. But wait a second, that's a problem. Lema masnisin d'loke hillel. Maybe that would mean that our Mishnah is not like hillel. Why? This non, because we learned in the Mishnah in Bab Metzia, in Hazav, I believe, that v'chein haya hillel, Omer hillel would say, lo salva isha kikar l'chavreta ashe tasena damim, that a woman should not lend a loaf of bread to her friend unless they evaluate the loaf of bread. Say this is $1.50 loaf of bread or a $4 loaf of bread, whatever it is. Why? Shema yukru chitin, because maybe from the time she borrowed it till her friend paid her back, the value of wheat went up. V'nimtzu bo'os lidei ribis, and they're going to come to ribis. So the idea is as follows, that if I borrow a loaf of bread from someone and that loaf of bread is, you know, 5 pounds of flour, and 5 pounds of flour costs $4. Okay, so it's a, whatever, $4 loaf of bread. But now if the cost of flour goes up to $5, and I bake that loaf of bread with the same 5 pounds of flour and I give it back to the friend, so now I borrowed something that was worth $4 and I'm paying back something that was worth $5. Now that's not ribis midaraisa, but that is in the category of sabasa, it's called. So sabasa is the idea that you don't want to do this with something that the price could escalate between the time you borrow and you return it. So better that you should pay back money, or you should at least value the item, because then at the end of the day, if the value of the commodity has gone up, flour, let's say, so then you could pay back money. So now, sabasa is a general concept that's accepted. It's a drabanan restriction of ribis, because in essence, you're paying back more than you borrowed. The machlokas between Hillel and the Chachamim has to do with, do we apply it to things like a loaf of bread or something that's relatively minimal, and it's not, it shouldn't be the area where the Chachamim had to make a concern about sabasa. But both Hillel and the Chachamim agree that with more significant things, like I can't tell you, here I'm going to give you 10 kor of wheat and you give me back 10 kor of wheat, because it could happen that the 10 kor of wheat will cost more by the time it gets returned. The question only is by small stuff. So Hillel says, even small stuff you don't do it, we're worried about sabasa. Nechama hold, we're not worried about sabasa. So our Mishnah says, a woman shouldn't can borrow from her friend only under these conditions on Shabbos, but not regularly. That implies during the week she can borrow. But ask the Gemara, so are you saying, according to Hillel, a woman should not be able to borrow a loaf of bread and give it back? So are you saying that our Mishnah is not like Hillel? So the Gemara answers, afilu teima Hillel, you could even say it's Hillel, habasra de kitz damel, habasra de like kitz damel. So he says that the Mishnah, that our Mishnah, which said a woman could borrow a loaf of bread and pay it back, is because the, you know, I don't know if it's the, by regulation, et cetera, by practice, but everyone knows a loaf of bread is $2. So now if a loaf of bread goes up to $3 because the ingredients have gone up, everyone will know and the woman will only pay her friend back $2. So while they didn't specifically value this bread, since everyone knows how much a loaf of bread costs, we'll be able to know if the value has gone up, because then everyone's going to say the standard price of a loaf of bread went from $2 to $3. So they'll understand you can only pay back money and not bread. Whereas Hillel, who said you can't do it unless you value the value of the bread before you give it, he was talking about in a place where they don't have a standard price for bread. If they don't have a standard price for bread, Hillel would tell you that you have to go get it valued so that you don't run into the problem that you might end up paying back with a more valuable loaf of bread at the end. Okay. So now our Mishnah said, "V'imeino mamino," that if someone doesn't trust a person and they basically want to borrow from them on Yom Tov, and they're not allowed to set a price, and they're not allowed to use the words halveni, and they're not allowed to write it down, so they want to make sure they're going to get their money back, so you could leave your garment there. So says the Gemara, "Itmar," we learned, "Havas Yom Tov, Rav Yosef Omer lo nitna li tava, v'Rav Omer nitna li tava." Rav Yosef says, this is not a collectible. In other words, at the end of the day, you did a transaction here and you cannot enforce it in court. All you can do is go back to the person and ask them for the money back. Ravid says you can get the money back. Now, why should this not be enforceable in court? It's not because it wasn't a valid loan. It is a valid loan. The concern is that if you're going to be able to enforce it in court, so then you're going to end up writing it down, because it's more important to write down. Where versus if it's not enforceable in court, because then it could be a longer term thing, but if it's not enforceable in court, you're going to go right away after Yom Tov, and you're going to want to get it back before the person forgets, before anything else happens. So that's what they're arguing about, is this enforceable in court or not when you do this borrowing where you say hishileini, you don't discuss price, can you collect in court on this loan? So the Gemara explains, Rav Yosef Amar lo nitna li tava. Rav Yosef says you can't go to court. Why? The Amar nitna li tava also the mikvah, because if you let the person go to court, then they're going to come to write it down. They're going to come to write it down. So Rabba Amar, so Rabba says, "Nitin li tava." No, you can't do it in court. Why do we let him collect in court? And we don't, even though it's a little bit of concern that maybe he'll come to write it down, we don't want to say he cannot collect in court, because the concern is if the guy I'm going to borrow the loaf of bread from, if I tell him that he can't collect it in court, he's not going to lend me the loaf of bread. And then I'm not going to have a good Yom Tov because I don't have bread. So better that we should allow it to be enforced in court. And hopefully the fact that there is strange language, that you can't set a price, and those things will remind them that, and the use of Hishileni will remind him that it's a unique Shabbos and Yom Tov form of borrowing, and he shouldn't write it down. Okay, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah. So this is, we're going to try to apply our Mishnah to this Machlokas to see whether you can collect in court on a loan that's made on Shabbos Yom Tov, permissibly made. So tonight we learned our mission in Amino. If the person he's borrowing from doesn't trust him, Meniach Taliso Etzlo, then he should leave a pikadon. He leaves his garment there. So ask the Gemara. I Amrit Bishlamon Lo Nitna Li Tava. It works well if you say that these types of borrowings that happen on Shabbos Yom Tov are not collectible in court. Mishum Hachi Meniach Taliso Etzlo. So that explains why he needs to leave his garment, and they make a cheshbon after Yom Tov, because the guy's going to say, look, I can't go collect in court, so at least give me your coat, and then I'll know that you're going to come back to pay me after Yom Tov. But if you're going to tell me that you're allowed to go to court and can bring the guy to court, so on my money, so he says, so what does he need to leave his garment there? Let him give it to him, and if the guy doesn't pay him back, he'll go to court and bring him to court. So it seems from the fact that the Mishnah says he might want to leave his garment there, if the guy doesn't trust him, it must mean that there's no court recourse, and that would be like Rav Yosef. So the Gemara says, Amar, lo, no, ba'ina, Amar, he said, lo, ba'ina, the lake in bedina v'dayno. He says, it doesn't mean that that's, the Mishnah is saying that he might take a cloak is not because he cannot go to court. This is like, not like Rav Yosef, this is like Rabba. He says, and the fact that he said you might want to leave your cloak there is not because you don't have recourse in court, but rather because the guy doesn't want to go through the process, Rashi says, of having to go to court and having to select judges and do all of that. It's a headache. So even though when someone comes to me to borrow a loaf of bread on Yom Tov, I could go collect in court afterwards, is what Rabba would say to you, but I don't want to. So therefore, I'd rather take your garment and hold on to it till you come after Yom Tov or after Shabbos. But theoretically, if I didn't take a garment, I would in fact be able to go to court. That's how Rabba would understand. Masa Ravidi Baravan, Ravidi Baravan asked also on this question of whether you can collect. It says, Hashochet is a para. So this is in a Mishnah in Maseches Shviyas. It says that if someone shechts a cow, the chilko b'Rosh Hashanah. So this is a fascinating case, and he divided it up on Rosh Hashanah. Im haya chodesh. Okay, so I'll just explain this case outside. I won't read it inside. It's a very fascinating case. So we know that the halacha is that if someone borrows money from another person at the end of Shemitah, that loan is canceled. It's not collectible unless it was a prusbol or whatever. But basically, the loan is canceled. So here's what happened in this case. It's Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah. It's the Rosh Hashanah immediately after a Shemitah year. So you would say, okay, great. It's Rosh Hashanah. So if someone borrows money on this Rosh Hashanah, then obviously Shemitah doesn't cancel it because it's already the year after Shemitah. But here's the problem. We know that that in the times of the Mishnah, they used to be mechadesh al pi ri'iya, that someone would have to see the moon, right? So they would, every month there was a question, is this a chodesh male or a chodesh chaser? Is it a 29-day month or a 30-day month? So mostly it's not relevant. I mean, you want to know, but you don't care if you know today, because let's say you want to know when is Pesach. So if the Rosh Chodesh Nisan, if Adar was 30 days or 29 days, you'll know what day Pesach is, but you don't need to know on the 30th day. But Rosh Hashanah is the one exception, because Rosh Hashanah is on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. So therefore, if if it turns out, so every year, forget just a regular year, you end up keeping possibly 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, because you start keeping Rosh Hashanah on the 30th day of Elul, because you're not sure, is this going to be the last day of Elul or the first day of Tishrei? So if it turns out that Edim come and it's the first day of Tishrei, you only keep 1 day of Rosh Hashanah. But if it turns out that you wait and wait on the 30th and no Edim come, so then it turns out that you were actually waiting on the weekday, but you're keeping it as if it's Rosh Hashanah because you don't know if Edim will come, then the day ends, and then that means tomorrow is really Rosh Hashanah, so then you'll end up keeping 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So here comes the fascinating case. So it was such a year, and the 30th day, so it was Rosh Hashanah, and it was the first day of Rosh Hashanah, and you decided to split up a cow amongst your friends. That is, by the way, was a very common practice that if you can't keep meat for months, you don't have a freezer. So what would they do? They didn't want any part of the animal to go to waste. So a group of people would say, look, I'll take 5 pounds of meat and you'll take 5 pounds. And they basically come together as a group and they go to the shochet and say, here, shech this cow for us, split it up this way. And we're going to eat it. So now what happens is as follows. So now let's read inside. Ashok is a part, some shech's a part, v'chilka, and divide it up, Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah. So now what happens? This is the Rosh Hashanah immediately after Shemitah year. Im ha'yachodesh mu'ubar, that if it was a full month, so it turned out that what they were keeping as the first day of Rosh Hashanah was really not Rosh Hashanah. It was really the 30th day of Elul, because it was a 30-day Elul, then Meshamet. So then the loan gets canceled. Why? Because what happened? I gave my cow to the butcher. Others took their pieces and they're supposed to pay me back for the parts that they took. So what do they have? They have a debt that they owe me. But it turns out that because Rosh Hashanah, it was possible Rosh Hashanah was going to be today, but it turns out really Rosh Hashanah is tomorrow. So now what day was it that you split up the cow and that your friends owe you money for the meat that they took? It was the last day of the Shemitah year. And we know that the Shemitah, the forgiveness of debt happens at the end of the Shemitah year. So therefore, you're like the idiot who on the last day of Shemitah, you lent people money, and that night, they don't owe you money anymore because the loan gets canceled because it turned out you lent money during Shemitah. Shemitah ended, all loans get forgiven, and therefore your loan is gone. V'im lav, if it turned out that the 30th day of Elul was in fact Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, and it was a Chodesh Chaser, then Eino Meshamet. Then it's not canceled. Now the way the Gemara is understanding at this point, and this is a big machlokas in the Rishonim, but we're going to go with Rashi. The way the Gemara is understanding here is that when it says you can Meshamet, means you cannot collect it, and the other says that if it turns out that this was actually Rosh Chodesh Tishrei and Rosh Hashanah is only going to be 1 day that year, that it turns out that the loan that happened on Rosh Hashanah in a permissible fashion was not during Shemitah because it was on Rosh Hashanah of the year after Shemitah. So then therefore that is not canceled and you'll be able to collect it. So now I'll ask the Gemara, V'ilo nitlo litava, my mishamet. So the Gemara says, if you're telling me that anyway I can't collect this kind of loan, so then what difference does it, in other words, what does it mean when the Mishnah says that Meshamet, that you can't collect because Shemitah canceled it, you can't collect anyway because this was a Yomtiv type of loan, and a Yomtiv type of loan you can't collect in court. So this seems to say that that you are allowed to collect in court, because if you're not allowed to collect in court, why is this a Shemitah halacha? Stam, whenever you borrow from someone on Rosh Hashanah and you split up an animal, or Shabbos or Yontav, you're not able to collect in court. The Gemara says, wait a second, Shani Hasam Digloy Milso Decholhu. He's saying, no, in that particular case, what did it turn out? If your loan got canceled, it didn't get canceled. It wasn't Meshamet. It means the reason you can't collect it is not because you split it up on Yom Tov, because it turns out you didn't actually split it up on Yom Tov. You split it up on the last day of last year. It's only you kept the first day of Rosh Hashanah in case it turned out to be Rosh Hashanah, but it turned out not to be Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah was the second day only. So therefore, what you thought was the first day of Rosh Hashanah was really a weekday. And therefore, if it was a weekday, so then theoretically you should be allowed to collect because it was not a, even though you thought it might have been Yomtiv, it was not a Yomtiv type of loan because it was on a weekday. So rather, the only reason you're not able to collect it is because it turned out that you got stuck making a loan on the last day of Shemitah year and then it got canceled that night. But that's why there's no proof from that Mishnah that the reason the Mishnah needed to tell us that it's you cannot collect it is because it turned out you did it on the weekday, so there's no problem of collection vis-a-vis the loan, and there's only a problem of Shemitah. So continues the Gemara, Tashma mi Seifa. But wait a second, listen to the Seifa of that Mishnah. Im Lav, if the first day of Rosh Hashanah was not the last day of last year, Eino Meshamet, means it's not canceled from collection, which means you're allowed to collect it. So says the Gemara. If you say that generally you're allowed to collect it, that's why it's saying it's not canceled from collection because you can now go collect it. So that works if you understand that a loan that was made on Rosh Hashanah is collectible. But if you say that in general, anytime you make a loan in Yom Tov, it's not collectible, so the language of the Gbach is my in a Meshamet. Why? What does it mean when it says it's not canceled from collection and you could go collect it? Says the Gemara, like, if you're not able to collect it anyway because it was a Yom Tov loan, so who cares about Shemitah? It's not collectible regardless. So what does it mean when the Mishnah says that it's not canceled from collection? The Gemara says, no. So this, by the way, you might have been wondering this all along, but the Gemara phrased it this way, but the Gemara says, the Yoiv Le Shokil. She says, no, there's a huge distinction whether this loan was canceled because of Shvius, or not collectible because it was a Yom Tov type of loan. What's the difference? That if I do a Yom Tov loan, it's true maybe that I can't go collect in Beis Din, but I can still go to my friend and say, you owe me the money. If I lent money to him on the last day of the Shemitah year and then it got canceled, I can't even get the money. So he says, the Yoiv Le Shokil, that when it says Einem Shamit, that the loan is not canceled by Shemitah, it means that I'm able to collect it from him, because if it was canceled by Shemitah, I can't collect it at all. I'm not allowed to take it from him. So the Gemara says, Mechlad the Resha Yoiv Le Lo Shokyo. So the Gemara says, okay, so you're telling me that what it means, Meshamet or Eino Meshamet, means you're telling me that in the Resha, that Yoiv Le Lo Shokyo, that if the guy comes to pay me, in other words, let's say it turned out that it was Rosh Hashanah, that what we thought was the first day Rosh Hashanah, and I split this animal with people and they owe me money, and then it turned out that it wasn't the first day Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah was on the second day, so therefore Shemitah happened, you're going to tell me that if one of my friends who split the animal with me tries to pay me, I'm not allowed to take it from him? Because you're telling me this new halacha. So the Gemara says, yeah. So he says, Reisha tzarech lemeimer le mishamet ani, seifa lo tzarech lemeimer le mishamet ani. He says, in fact, that is the truth. Because if I lend someone money in Shemitah, and then Shemitah cancels it, and the guy comes and wants to pay me, I'm not allowed to take it. I have to tell him no. And then, we'll see in a second, no doesn't have to be no, but I have to say no. And then, if he wants, he can still pay me, but I have to deny the money the first time. Versus, if I borrowed on Yom Tov, so then the guy can't say no, and I won't say no either to taking the money because he actually owes it to me. Let's just finish the mission, then I'll recap. Kedisnan, like we learned in the mission, this idea they have to say no. Hamachzir chov b'shvias, if someone tries to pay someone back a loan that they had done during the Shemitah year or during the Shemitah cycle, Yomer, and it got canceled, Yomer lo, he should say, Meshamet ani. He should say, sorry, I would love to collect your loan, but it was canceled. Yom Omer lo, if the guy says to him, Afal Pikein, I want to pay you, I know it was canceled, Yekabel mimenu, you could accept it from him, Mishum shenemer, because the Pasuk says, Vezed dvar ha-Shemitah, this is the word of the Shemitah. Meaning your obligation, that's not its official meaning, the official meaning is this is the matter of Shemitah, but that Dvar Shemitah tells you what you need to do is say, I don't want to collect it. If the guy still wants to pay you, then that's your choice. So now, what are we coming up with here? This whole thing was brought up to be a machlokas. We thought it was relevant to proving whether or not you can collect in court when you do a yomtiv lending, because we thought that's what was going on with this Mishnah was splitting up the cow. It turns out the Mishnah splitting up the cow was totally different, because the Mishnah splitting up the cow was the following, that if it turns out the day you thought was Rosh Hashanah turns out to be the last day of the year, it's Lamed Elul of the Shemitah year, so then if you split up the animal, in fact, it's canceled, and if someone wants to come pay you, you have to tell them, no, you don't pay me. And then you only have to wait. If they say Apple Pecan, then you can collect it. But if the day that you thought was Rosh Hashanah in fact turned out to be Rosh Hashanah, so it's not Lamed Elul and it's Echad B'Tishrei, so then it's a fully collectible loan. Now, and we don't know from that Mishnah whether you're able to collect it or not in Beis Din, because all we know is that it's not canceled by Shemitah because it was on the first day of the new year. And if it's not canceled by Shemitah, I don't need to tell the person, no, I don't want your money. So that's what's going on there in the thing about Rosh Hashanah. They're arguing about whether Shemitah canceled it. The question about whether you can collect a Yom Tov loan in court, we don't know from there. Continues the Gemara, Rav Avia, Shaka Mashkona, that Rav Avia used to do something like this. He would take a garment or something from the person to make sure he'd get paid back for what people borrowed from him on Yom Tov. Rabba Bar Ula, Mar Marume, Rabba Bar Ula would do something else. He would go take something from the person or borrow something. The difference in the Rishonim, how they learn, take or borrow something from a person after Yom Tov, and then he wouldn't give it back. Either he wouldn't give it back at all, and he took that as repayment, or he wouldn't give it back until they paid him for what they borrowed from him on Yom Tov. But in any event, you see the idea that that people could take certain measures to make sure that they get repaid. Okay, so our Mishnah continues the thing, continues the Gemara. Our Mishnah talked about the fact that Erev Pesach, if Erev Pesach was Shabbos, and according to Rashi, you had forgotten to buy your Karban Pesach, you could buy your Karban Pesach on Shabbos, you don't discuss price, and you're gonna pay the guy after Yom Tov. So I'm Rav Yochanan says, Makdish Adam Piska B'Shabbos, so our mission is gonna be relevant to Machlokas we're gonna see here, or Halacha we're gonna see here, which says a person can be Makdish his Pesach on Shabbos, V'Chagigaso B'Yom Tov. So someone has to bring, in the scenario we described, where he has his Karban Pesach and it's Shabbos, and if Shabbos is Erev Pesach, he can be Makdish his Karban Pesach on that Shabbos. Or if someone comes to Yom Tov and he has a Chagiga, we know that all of the Gimel Regalim, someone needs to bring a Karban Chagiga that they're going to eat the meat of on Yom Tov. So if he wasn't Makdish it as a Karban before Yom Tov, he can be Makdish it on Yom Tov. So, and the reason that halacha is so is because we say, as Rashi points out, that since they allowed him to offer it on Yom Tov or Shabbos, so they allowed him also to be Makdish on Yom Tov or Shabbos. Neima Mesayele, so let's say there's a support from that, that from our Mishnah, it said, V'chein, Erev Pesach B'Yishlayim Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, that if it's Erev Pesach in Yerushalayim that falls out on Shabbos, Meniach Taliso Etzol, that he could give his garment to the guy who sells lambs, and not those pisco, he should take his carbon pesach, but also imo cheshbon achar yantif, and he'll make a cheshbon achar yantif. So he says, so the halacha that we initially brought was Rabbi Yochanan says that you can be makdish your carbon pesach in the first place on Shabbos when it's Erev Yantif. So our mission seems to support it, because our mission says you could buy it in the first place on Shabbos. So if you could buy it in the first place on Shabbos, obviously, you have to get it to become a carbon Pesach, so it must be that you could be makdish a carbon pay. You could be makdish a carbon on Shabbos or Yom Tov if you're going to be offering it on that Shabbos or Yom Tov. We should see from our Mishnah. So that seems to be a support to Rabbi Yochanan's halacha. So the Gemara says maybe not so fast. Hachav b'mayaskinon. Maybe what are we talking about in our Mishnah? We say we could take your, you could buy a carbon Pesach on Erev Yom Tov that Shabbos. It b'memana achirim imo al pischo. The Meikarish Mikdash V'Kai. He says, no, what's the case in our Mishnah? What it's really talking about is where you went to a Chevra who already was Makdish their Karban Pesach, and you said, can you count me in your group? So in other words, that you're able to buy into a group on on Shabbos, that's Erev Pesach, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you could buy an animal from scratch and be makdish it. Because when you buy a chelek in an animal that was already kadosh, so then you're not being makdish it on Shabbos. So no proof from our Mishnah. So ask the Gemara of Hanan Tanan. We learned in a Mishnah as follows, which is also, I believe, a Mishnah in Beya and Daf Chazayin, that it says, Ein nimnin ala behemo betzchila b'yantiv. So he says, wait a second. You're telling me that you're buying into a group who has an animal on Yom Tov? He says, but the Mishnah says you can't buy into groups on Yom Tov. So therefore, it doesn't make sense to answer. You're telling me that what our Mishnah says, that you can buy a carbon Pesach, means you buy into a group. The reality is the Mishnah Beis says you can't buy into a group. So the Gemara says, Shani Hacha, Kiva de Ragalatlo, Kamanda Imnele Me Karadami. He says, no, because our Mishnah not only is talking about when it says you could buy a carbon Pesach on Erev Shabbos, on Shabbos at Erev Yom Tov, is not only that you buy a chelik, it's you buy a chelik from people who you buy every year. So you're the guy who's the last minute guy who remembers on Erev Pesach that, wait a second, I didn't buy into my chabura. And your chabura, they know you, so they had you in mind, they figured you're gonna be part of this. So this is not really joining a new group, this is a group who you do this with every year. So ask the Gemara, so now the Gemara asks a different question. That Rabbi Shaya learned that a person can go to a shepherd who he knows, the nosin lo tle le pischa, and the shepherd can give him a sheep for his carbon pesach umakdisho. He's makdish it the yotze bo, and he can be yotze with it. So that seems very clear. You go, you buy an animal, you're makdish it, and you're yotze with it, so you don't have to twist yourself in a pickle to say our Mishnah is talking about a group that he's worked with in the past and he didn't remember, now he bought in. It seems to say very clearly you can buy and be makdish it. So the Gemara says, no, not so fast. Hasam nami kivan derogel etzol akdushe leimei kara. This is a guy, instead, he's the same kind of guy who's last minute guy who remembers at the last minute and he didn't take care of it, but it's not that he goes to his group and goes in with the group, but rather he goes to the shepherd, and the shepherd says, I know you, you're the guy who comes last minute, I was makdish an animal for you already, here it is, here's your carbon Pesach. So there's no proof that you could be makdish on Shabbos, we're saying. So it says the Gemara, well, makdish katani. The Mishnah said makdish. He said he was makdish it, it says that he gives him a tle, umakdish, and he's makdish, and he's yotzi it. So the Gemara says, you're right, the owner, after the shepherd gives it to him, he is makdish it, but hektish iloi midrabanan. All he's doing is, he's giving it another layer of hektish. Now, from the word Rashi says, mala ba'alma, it's an enhancement, sheyakdishu bailam, that the owners should be the one who are makdish it. So from Rashi, although I think others learn Rashi differently, Rashi, to me, seems to be saying that it's a good thing to do, because now not only was the roe makdish it, but the owner reinforces the hektish, but he's not being makdish it in the first instance. Others, I think, understand and read into Rashi that you have to. In other words, it's not just a nice thing, it's saying you have to do it. And I guess you see that from the Mishnah, from where it says, umakdish v'yotze bo. So the idea would be that the roe was makdish it for him, Erev Shabbos. Shabbos, that's Erev Yontev, he was makdish it himself. But the hektish that he makes on Shabbos isn't a real hektish, because it was already hektish from yesterday. He's just doing his own version of being makdish it. So basically, we're leaving off that we don't have a proof to Rabbi Yochanan from these halachas that are in our Mishnah and in the similar brises, because we could explain the Mishnahs to be Mishnah or brises to be talking about a case where somehow the animal was already hektish from before Shabbos, either because his friends had him in mind or because the roa had him in mind. But there's no proof from our Mishnah that you can actually be makdish an animal on Shabbos Yom Tov. So now at the Gemara, a more fundamental question. Is it possible that Rabbi Yochanan said this, that you could be makdish an animal on Yom Tov or on Shabbos? Because, so it says, Umiyam Rabbi Yochanan, how did Rabbi Yochanan really say this? V'ham Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is known to say halacha k'stam mishnah, that halacha always follows a stam mishnah, utnan. And we learned a mishnah in Psachim and in Beah that says, lo makdishin, that you aren't makdish something v'lom arichin, you can't make an erech a nether where you say you're going to give the value of yourself or of another person v'lom achrimen, you can't do a cherem, which is either being makdish something to bedek abayis or to the kohanim v'lom magbiin shumas ha'maisers, you can't be separate shumas ha'maisers, which is also something like a form of being makdish at something. Kol elu b'yantiv amru, all of these things were said on yantiv. Kavachomer b'shabbos, and surely on Shabbos. So what do you see? You see that there's a Mishnah that says, a stam Mishnah, and Rabbi Yochanan paskens like a stam Mishnah. And the Mishnah says that you're not makdish, you're not allowed to be makdish an animal or anything else on Shabbos, or yantiv. And yet, Rabbi Yochanan is the one who says that you could be makdish in a carbon Pesach on Shabbos when it falls out on Erev Pesach, and you have to do Karban Pesach. So we have a stira between Rav Yochanan's halacha and a stam Mishnah. We know that Rav Yochanan says halacha follows a stam Mishnah. So it says the Gemara, lo kasha, kam b'chova shekavula hem zman, kam b'chova she'in kavula hem zman. So he says there's a distinction. When did the stam Mishnah say that you cannot be makdish an animal? You cannot be makdish, like, you can't be makdish a carbon nedava on Yom Tif, because you don't need to bring it on Yom Tif. So therefore, you'll, or a chatas, or whatever, because a chatas you can't even bring on Yom Tif. So therefore, when the Mishnah says you can't be makdish on Shabbos or Yom Tov, it's talking about something that you don't need to bring today and you're not going to bring today, and therefore you're not going to be makdish it. But when did Rabbi Yochanan say that you can be makdish an animal on Shabbos? He said that's on a Shabbos that is Erev Pesach, and you have to bring your Karban Pesach. And because you have to bring your Karban Pesach, so therefore Chazal allowed you to be makdish something on Shabbos. That's what it means. Chovah shekavul lahem zman, that if you have an obligation that has a specific time, like the Karban Pesach, when you need to be brought on Erev Pesach, and if Erev Pesach is Shabbos, you can be makdish the animal and bring it on Shabbos, and whereas chovos that don't have a Zman Kavua, those you're not going to bring, because you're not able to bring it on Shabbos anyway, so you can't be makdish it on Shabbos either. Okay? Good fach, Shavuot Tov.